honk.
I'm Darth Vader, man.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, so Wayne, if you guys don't know, Wayne has come down with coronavirus, and he's being kind to me. So. Wayne, are you my father?
The Force is weak in this one, because he did not find many notes.
Oh, no.
In the Californication episode.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm sure we'll find some stuff. Is that true? Did you not find much to talk about?
No, I have a ton.
Oh, well, then we're perfect.
Yeah, we're good. We're good to go. I just had to do my Darth Vader thing. You know?
And don't ever do this again on camera, by the way. It gives me flashbacks to my worst breakup, okay?
Oh, there's so many breakup things. Like, this was clearly a very, like, you know, lots of feminine energy episode. We got some insight on me and some stuff.
Oh, well, like I have no insight on that, and we probably shouldn't be talking about that at all, because we'll just, sure, you know, show ourselves to be the fools we are. Which I guess is what this
podcast
is.
We already do that?
Yeah.
Anyway, starting off, shout out to Joe Kim. Masks are okay, Joe. Masks are okay. Don't listen to other people.
Whoa, that's not good. Joe Kim doesn't wear her mask. Joe Kim, you got to wear your mask.
No, she's totally pro-mask. There's some...
Okay.
There's some presence. Like, some people want to see her beautiful face, so...
Okay. Well, then she could stay on our... She could stay on our fan list, then. But any fans out there not wearing their masks...
Can't do that.
Yeah, and you guys can only stay our fans if you donate to Patreon anyways. And
which,
you know,
Joe
Wayne
Kim qualifies for it as well.
Right, okay, right. And Wayne and I have come up with a prize here. If we get 10 Patreon subscribers by the end of our season finale episode, which will be next episode, we're going to give away a car on the last episode. So you know, legally, as far as I understand, that's binding. People have definitely been sued and taken to court for making illegitimate offers before, and, you know, throwing
Hot
Wheels.
Let's specify, it's like a Hot Wheels car, yeah.
Well, I was gonna say that's what you do, is you throw a Hot Wheel at it. There's one where a station did just like an absolutely absurd thing where they made people like touch a car for like days or something like that, and you know, like it was one of those things where like who can last the longest, right, without like passing out. Or it might have been one of those ones where they like didn't let you pee, which eventually killed someone, and so they can't do stuff like that anymore. But they definitely lost. They got sued. I think I'll have to look up the details, but it was like a Hooters employee who won the event, and then they tried and like gave her like a Hot Wheel basically, and it was like nah, this isn't okay. So so Wayne and I will be giving away a car. It may or may not be a Hot Wheel. Take your chances. You know, but if you sign up for our Patreon, you will be eligible for the car. Yeah, there are other requirements too, which we're not going to release right now. So you just have to trust us. We're very trustworthy people. We're poker players.
Season 1, episode 11.
That's 111 for those of you out there, right? Very special time, 111. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is completely coincidental, but we are recording this right now, Wayne. You know what time it is?
11:11. Oh my gosh!
It's 1:10, but it's about to be 1:11. And you said 11. You're just lying to our fans. It's not 11:11. It's about to be 1:11. I'm watching 1:11. The clock.
Okay.
I'm waiting.
We could have just stalled like when it actually hit, so I didn't have to lie.
Yeah, but we're not that smart. I mean, straight up, like
you are. You've been on Jeopardy. You know, they shout out to Ryan
Hemmel. I lost.
Ryan
Hemmel,
who was on Live with the Bike, like won 5 episodes in a row. Oops, spoilers on Jeopardy.
Oops, yeah, don't spoil that. But that's impressive for him. And see, that just goes to show what a big mistake I made, ruining my Jeopardy eligibility by appearing on the college episode, right? Whereas had I appeared on Jeopardy as an adult, it would have been, although I needed the money way more in college than I do now, you know, because now as a poker player, right, I still don't have any money, but any money that comes into my hands, I would immediately lose. So what's the point anyways? No point in working, you know, and I'm not.
The point is vacant.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll go to turn the page here, and that's what this episode is about, right? Turning the page.
Yeah.
What does that mean? It's like a Bob Seger song in your head, right? And I guess it means moving on, right? Now we're leaving Karen behind, or Becca's moving on, or Karen and Hank are leaving each other behind. Hank's moving on to his new, you know, superstar relationship with Mia. No.
I don't know.
It didn't happen, right?
So Hank, Karen, and Becca are at Bill's pool place, and Karen's trying on her, you know, wedding dress to Taeyong, and for her wedding with Bill. And Mia walks in and is like, oh, should I go braless? And then sees Hank is like, ooh, I didn't know there was a gentleman in our presence.
Yeah. Yeah, gentleman used loosely as Karen says. But of course, Hank really is like a gentleman, right? He is like a modern gentleman. He's definitely, you know, he's white knighted numerous times in these episodes, and he seems to care about people. So he is kind of a gentleman. Has Becca seen Bill's house, by the way? She lives there, right?
Yeah,
well, if you lived in Bill's house, you wouldn't leave Bill's house, right? You see that pool?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. You know, I've seen Bill's house. I've seen Hank's house. More Hank's house.
It's whether you want to live in luxury or live in the company of people who, you know, you're jiving with.
Mm-hmm. And she doesn't jive with Bill and Karen and Mia?
Well, I mean, clearly. I mean, Karen was like the only person I feel like she jived with.
Yeah, she probably didn't jive with Karen anyways. Karen's way too much of a pretty princess for her. So, you know, Becca's got that robot monotone thing going on. She's not going to jive with Karen. You know, Karen is very emotional, that one.
Shout out to the future.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill comes home and Hank cites that it's bad luck to see the bride in her wedding dress, so Karen should take it off.
Yeah.
Boom. And then, you know.
And then we finally get Karen nude on the show, which was a long time coming.
Yeah. Psych.
That didn't happen.
No.
No.
Yeah. Something in her claws was okay, like just like Trixie.
Yeah, really amazing that she manages. Well, shout out to the future.
Shout out to the future. So,
Judy Greer in the house.
Becca wants to have a family conversation with Karen and Hank, and Becca's like, it's a family conversation. Karen's like, well, we're all family here. And Becca's like, okay, if you want.
Yeah, that's bogus. Bill's just like some random dude that popped into her life, right? Like, he's not really family, but, you know, and very, you know, not showing much respect to Karen for, you know, insisting that Bill take part in that. But, you know, that's the stupid stuff that people do. So, you know, whatever.
But so, Becca.
Out with it, Becca. Out with it.
Drops the bomb that she wants to live with Hank, which crushes Karen, and she walks away. And
good. Karen deserves it because she ran off, you know? Like, yeah. You know, and look, Becca and Hank, I guess they get along well. I don't, you know, Becca at this point, probably she just kind of wants to live by herself, which is why she wants to move with Hank, because she knows Hank is not going to be, you know, Hank's not going to be all up in her business. So maybe she just wants to.
I don't know. I have a little insight on, or at least a guess. I have no idea, obviously.
Yeah.
But Hank asks Becca if she thought it through, and then Becca storms off because it's like people getting insulted, but they're not just like, you know, it's when it's Hank and Karen, it's the adults are talking, and then they're trying to care for Becca, but they don't really consider Becca's views that much. So obviously, Karen's like super upset because her child, which, you know, usually children have a stronger bond with the mom, is like, you know, I want to be with dad.
Not girls. Girls a lot of times don't have a stronger bond with the mom. Bond with the mom. They're often at very much at odds. When they get older, they do, but they're often very much at odds with their mom, and they have a stronger bond with their dad.
Oh, when they're younger.
Yeah, especially in their teenage years, right? That's just massive, massive conflict.
Yeah,
for
but
everybody.
That's teenage years. I'm talking about like when they're kids. Like,
but isn't Becca a teenager?
Like preteen, I guess. I mean, in the episode they claim she's a teenager, but like...
Like 13, right? 12, 13.
Either way, like a mom's just going to be like... The mom usually cares more than a dad, so I don't know.
You're coming at it from a guy's
uh-oh.
Perspective.
Oh, yeah.
But, hey, Wayne, I just want to let you know, as I was listening to this, I just want to remind you, there are people in your life that love you. And there are people in your life that want you to succeed, no matter what kind of shit you went through. You know, there's people who love you and want you to succeed and care for you. Just letting you know.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You're one of them.
Everybody.
Or no, that's the way you check race me all the time.
I've been told there are others. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why you check raise me all the time. I see how it is.
I check raise you all the time because I want to give you more money. Have I ever check raise you all the time and won? I doubt
yes.
it.
Yeah.
Oh, When? Like, I don't remember this. You're,
have I
you're
ever
actually,
won a hand against you? I've like, I'm like 1 in 10.
Okay, so I don't really remember check raising you. Actually, you seem fairly adept at avoiding check raises on the, you know, especially on the river. And I mean, check raises at other times, they don't really matter that much. They're just part of it. But like, I do remember one time I had like ace deuce and I spiked a deuce on the river for a trip deuces and I check raised you and you were like, ah, somehow I knew that was coming. It was like a, we were playing like four handed and it was like, you know, you were like the button and I was the big blind. So it was like,
did I pay you
it was like,
off? I remember
what?
That.
Yeah, you did pay it off. But I mean, like you had a good hand. I mean, it was like a totally standard hand. It was just like one of those hands that's like not super interesting. Like there's, you know, there's obviously not, there's obviously a reduced number of deuces in my range and the hand just, you know, you had like top pair, top kicker or something like that. Like it, you just, it was like, a, like, I think you might even had an ace. So like, that wasn't even out for me. You just took a bad beat. Like
oh,
that's
I
not,
do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not even an interesting hand. This is like, that's really not like, I don't remember. Maybe you remember a slick check raise I pulled on you. I don't remember. Okay. I remember you avoiding a bunch of nonsense I tried on you. The favorite hands that I have against you are hands where I called you down actually.
Yeah. Those scar me really hard.
But I don't. But listen, man, it's been a while.
This is like completely live with mic audience. It's like literally, if I were anybody else, I would not get called in like so many spots. But because of me, it's just like,
yeah. No, people want to put a hit on you, and then they can go on video and be like, I got one over on Wayne Chang, poker celebrity. You know, like I don't know how that affects your game. People do the same thing to me, but it's just because they hate me. So
no, I appreciate they hate me too.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, like I said, Wayne, not everybody hates you, you know?
Yeah, the guys I donate to don't hate me.
What?
They're like, thank you, come again.
No, there are people out there who care about you and who want you to succeed in this life. Shout out to Joe Kim. thanks for
your
patronage, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you for your patronage.
Yes, all right.
So, yeah, and then, you know, when Hank asked Becca if she thought it through, then Becca gets insulted because clearly she thought it through, because Becca always thinks things through and Hank is trying to be like trying to do the good thing to like mediate, but it's just like then Becca gets insulted and storms off.
I mean, look, in this particular moment, there's no way for emotions not to be running super high, right? Karen's not going to believe that Hank had nothing to do with it. You know, Becca is going to be upset no matter what, because at least one, maybe both of her parents are going to be upset. They might not even honor her wishes here. You know, she doesn't know what's happening. Like, there's just, it's what you called it, a bomb. It's a bomb. It's just going to cause, you know, brain rush, you know, all sorts of, you know, hormones, chemicals, just, you know, flooding the brain. It's a good thing no guns are involved. You know, it's a healthy
family.
No
guns, just roses.
Yeah.
Dead roses. So yeah, well, Bill leaves, and then Mia's like, and then there was two. Mia's like, and then there was two.
Yeah, and then Mia tries to get inappropriate with it, as she always does. Always cranks it up to level 10.
Mm. Mia asks her to take off the dress, and Hank's like, oh, and then there was one.
Yeah.
But even though Mia cranks up to 10 later in the episode, hashtag spoilers, there is an explanation in a sense that, like, you know, she was shunned. But I have a response to Mia that's not in the episode, so stay tuned, guys.
Until next one?
No, this episode, but we're not at the part yet where Mia, you know, kind of explains.
Okay, well, don't leave. Don't leave us, okay? Please don't turn the podcast
please
off.
Please don't go.
Please, okay. Please, you got to hear Wayne's take on Mia. Wait, please. No, don't. we lost another one.
Hank is late with his meeting with Runkle, and so I guess they're not roommates anymore. And Hank's like, what's going on? Were you like, you know, snooping around, like stuff, you know, turned over? Hank's Runkle's like, I was snooping for words that I could sell. And said, Runkle's like, by the way, Mia's like a sick writer. And here's where the elitism from the blog, the LA blog stuff comes in. Like, Hank doesn't believe that just anyone could write. So the fact that there's like the internet, and like anyone can blog, anyone can tweet, that's like insulting to him, because he feels like a published piece of work that's like has to go through the process of filtration and then you know, presentations toward the public. That's like, you know, he's like, look, there's Shakespeare, there's Dickens,
there's Moody, right?
There's Moody, Clemens, Moody, Faulkner.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly all the good writers. Bret Easton Ellis.
Five of a kind.
Yeah. Moody, and Moody, and one more Moody. No, yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, that's a pretty consistent character trait, right? He does say like she might have a little bit in there, right? She might. He is nice. He says she might have a. I've seen a
wordsmith.
Yeah, so that's like that's high praise from Hank, and I mean she's only 16, so if she's a budding wordsmith at 16, maybe she has the kind of talent that's going to be able to make it out. Maybe he's seen a little bit. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to just like completely trash her. I don't know, but he has read. I think he's read something of hers at this point. Maybe not. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, Runkle says she's bloomed, and yeah. Runkle said Danny Calfornta discovered it, and if Runkle doesn't pan out, there's like a ton of lawsuits that will follow because you know Danny Calfornta and Runkle. Blah, blah,
blah. You like how we have the parallel here, right? Where like Danny is blackmailing Runkle for Mia, right? Which seems very very fitting, and then Mia, right? What Hank is about to realize is it's also Mia blackmailing him, right? He doesn't totally realize it yet, but he's about to. Because you know, and it's very, very funny because Hank makes fun of him, says, "Listen, you're gonna go to trial. You know, there's only bad stuff that can happen. You start messing around with your assistant," and it's like, Hank's the one in jeopardy, man. Like, but he doesn't at the moment he's delivering this, he doesn't totally get how much jeopardy he's in. You know, shout out to Ryan and
shout to Jeopardy. Yeah. And then Runkle's like. Or sorry, Hank's like, it was your fault, blah, 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 and he will show up behind Runkle in court so he's in all the sketches, and Runkle's like, I don't get credit for the women I don't harass, and Hank's like, I don't get credit for the dicks I don't suck.
It's a very Moving on. Yeah.
Runkle reads the coverages to the book, and Hank is like, what the fuck? This book is mine. Technically, it's partially hers. Maybe she should get like a special thanks.
Yeah, he doesn't say it out loud, right? He just looks through the book and then he storms off.
Yeah, but so, we know.
Right. And it's surprising to me that Charlie doesn't figure it out at this moment either, but maybe he, I don't know. Charlie might not figure it out, but maybe figure out that maybe Hank is the older man in the book at this point. But, you know, I guess Runkle, he's a semi-hotshot agent. Maybe he's not that quick.
But it's also like they do a lot of things for, you know, the story. You know, I love Californication, Tom Campinos, but just like some stuff is like, come on, this is not going to pan out in reality.
Well, but this that is
also you're... is like what's charming about the show. It's just it wouldn't pan out like this.
I mean, sure, but you're always giving them credit. I never give credit to anything fictional. I always just treat it as if it's real and say these people are idiots.
Shakespeare's you know, but real.
Yeah, no, they're also idiots, man. Romeo and Juliet are idiots.
No,
absolute morons.
No.
You know, Othello's supposed to be like a great general. Dude's an idiot, man.
No.
Okay.
He just got deluded by his first lieutenant.
Yeah.
Iago.
I understand. He's got too many emotions, right? He got deluded because he's prone to being deluded because he's prone to believing a bunch of bullshit. You know, he doesn't listen to the right people.
And that's so not realistic, huh?
People aren't prone to listen to a bunch of bullshit. I don't know. Like on social media,
maybe?
Is killing people realistic? Shout out to OJ. You know, Wayne, I wanted to make a sitcom with starring OJ once upon a time, but I guess it just wouldn't work. It's just too edgy. But like, they should really be adding like OJ to like Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Like, he should be like a recurring character. Just saying. And every time he should make jokes about killing people. He should be really angry and say, I'm going to kill you. All right.
Only if he did it, though.
That's only too dark. You want him to, like, actually kill people on the episode?
No, I'm just saying only if he, I don't know, whatever.
Well, you got to call the hotline to find out. You know, 995 goes to OJ every time you call and report who actually killed her. So
Hank visits Bill's, but he's like locked out. Hank knocks, there's no answer. So he leaps over the fence and sees Karen and he's like, dude, I knocked. Karen's like, I didn't hear. Like,
yeah.
You know, WTF.
Yeah, I don't know who's telling the truth. But he really storms off to see Mia, right? Like he storms, he's raging in the moment and he has to see Mia. And instead he runs into you know, Karen looking as bad as Karen's ever looked on the show. Not sure if she's done her hair. At least they've done her hair to make it seem like she hasn't done her hair.
Maybe by the way, shout out in the inside, okay?
Yeah. She's very beautiful anyways, but you know, shout out to George Clooney, who I learned yesterday apparently cuts his own hair with a Flowbee. So
it's a Flowbee.
Flowbee is a hair cutting tool that you hook up to a vacuum cleaner and use it to cut your own hair. And apparently this is what George Clooney does. George Clooney's worth $500 million. Mm-hmm. He goes to award shows and he cuts his own hair with a vacuum cleaner. Like, respect, man.
How did he make $500 million? Was it from stealing from Bellagio?
Yeah, I'm stealing from, there's a big heist, and he also probably stole from his...
But he chopped it up 11 ways.
You know what I heard? I heard yesterday that George Clooney invited 14 of his friends over to his house. And these, like, not...
friends?
Wow. He's got, trust me, if George Clooney needs friends, he's got them, right? I'll be your friend, sure. Especially with what I'm about to tell you, right? Clooney, for not his rich friends, like not Brad Pitt, he invited 14 of his friends over, like from his younger days and whatnot, and gave them all bags. And inside the bag, there was $1 million in each bag. Really? How sick is that? Don't you want to be George Clooney's friend?
I mean, I always did.
Right, exactly. and then I thought, you know, think about all the people, like, you know, some guys who've like hit it really rich, you know, like, you know, some like really, really rich guys. Bitcoin billionaire, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shout out to Roger.
Where's your $1 million? You know what I'm saying?
I almost had one, and I'm going to deny that it ever happened because I don't have squat anymore. So
that was good. Good story. Good, really good story. You almost had $1 million, and now you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
okay. Well, I'm just saying that was all you. You earned that. I'm just saying, we got these friends, right? We got no money. We're broke as a joke. We got friends who can easily give up $20 million. They wouldn't even notice it, okay? It would just be a mere blip in their balance sheet to be gone within, you know, a couple months, and nothing. Where's my bag full of $1 million? You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, where's mine? Where's yours, right? If you hit it big, okay, would you give your friends $1 million?
Depends how big. $500 million?
If you had $500 million, would you give 14 friends $1 million?
I would have to chop up.
Cancel. No. Hesitation was enough. Cancel the episode. I am no longer doing this podcast. You're an asshole, man.
I may have more than 14 friends to give. So if I had 500, I might have to chop it up a little more. But I would.
Okay.
That is
a very good point. If you have 14, if you only give out like 14,
if I only had 14 friends, then yeah. They would all get a mil.
I think
I might have to chop up more because of there's like a lot of people in my life that have helped me out.
You do have to draw a cutoff, right?
Yeah.
At some point, right? Like, and that is difficult because you're right. I probably have more than 14 people too. I often thought about this, like, you know, if I really did hit the lottery, what I would want to do is like hook up all my relatives. You know, and just like sign them over to like a few $1 million on the lottery. So they're just getting like, you know, like 50 grand a year or whatever, like, you know, enough money that they, you know, can, they have lots of options for what they're going to do with their lives.
There's definitely some family members I have helped me out that I would need to help. And especially like, yeah. And then some friends as well that
I have a lot fewer people on the hookup list, Wayne. So you're on my hookup list, but I understand if I'm not on yours, I get it.
You're definitely
on my hookup list.
You're one of the people that helped me out. I was like, you know, I was losing every hand for like a year and a
month. Yeah, no, I helped you out by check raising you every hand, teaching you that, you know, you're going to have to try and do other things, right? So I respect. You know, but like, yeah, man, if I hit the lottery.
You didn't give me fish. You're like, you better learn to fish or you're fucking dead.
Exactly. That has some value, right? I didn't teach you how. You know, sure. I just exposed your inability to fish. And that, you know, there's a lot of value there. But no, I mean, I got to hit like a decent sized lottery. But, you know, if I hit a decent sized lottery, man, everybody I like is never, they might choose to work again, but they ain't going to have to work again. I'm just saying.
Please, for the love of God, have Michael Lamas hit the lottery.
Yeah, by the way, this is in part why I think my only path to any like real wealth is through the lottery. Because there is something to be said for people who can't accumulate tons and tons of wealth because they will hook people up. And it is true that, like, the people who do accumulate, like, insane gobs of wealth, I actually think they're the people who are less likely to hook other people up because their empathy is already off, you know, on some level.
Damn.
Anyways, so, because, you know, generally you have to, you know, do some things that maybe some people wouldn't do to accumulate great wealth. That's I'm just saying.
That's fair.
All right, back to talking about, you know, dicks and mouths or whatever it was that we were talking about.
So Hank busts into Runkle's office. Oh, sorry, we aren't there yet. So Hank leaps over the wall. Build that wall. Hank leaps over the wall and sees Karen. Karen's like, I didn't hear the
coming,
knock.
Man.
Yeah. And then Karen goes off how it was Hank's insidious plan for Becca to move out because Becca's incapable of coming out for that of that plan. That's totally untrue. And yeah. Hank is like, she's a teenager. And Karen's like, fine, maybe you didn't come up with it. But still, Karen can't handle it. And I really empathize with Karen in this spot. So,
yeah, well, you got to blame someone, right? So she's got to – can't possibly be her fault. So she has to blame it on Hank or whatever. But, yeah, really tough spot. Obviously, divorce sucks for – you know, again, they're not technically divorced. But sucks for everybody involved, man, because it puts the kid in an untenable position where they have to choose one parent over the other, one living situation over the other, devastating at least one parent. You know, it's bad for everyone involved. Yep. Everyone's, you know, life, happiness, maximum number goes down as a result. Although maybe I shouldn't say that because, you know, sometimes your life happiness maximum goes up because it's so miserable living with somebody you don't like.
Interesting conversation. And
yeah, well, I mean, that's why I put my dog down, you know, the other day because he was pissing me off.
So now Hank busts in Runkle's office and Mia's there, Danny California's there, and this other lady, Vicky, who's there, who Hank owed a book, I guess, since the last good guy was in office.
Yeah, by the way, Vicky, go ahead.
They did specify it was 7 years ago from 2007, so it would be 2000. So
right.
They just specified who was the last good president.
No, it would have been Clinton, right? Because that was the election that Gore lost to Bush. So, yeah, they were definitely referencing Clinton on that one. You know, it's funny because the publisher woman reminded me of a lot of Judith Regan. Judith Regan is this complete sociopath who actually published O.J. Simpson's book, If I Did It. Changed by Fred Goldman, I believe, to I Did It. She reminded me. She was just really, really cutthroat. I guess she has some kind of history with Hank. Man, Mia in this scene, yikes. Wow, yikes. She is a hellspawn, man. She makes an inappropriate joke. The Judith Regan knockoff character took a shot at Elizabeth Wurtzel, who wrote that book, Prozac Nation, which was basically just... it's kind of like narcissistic book about her own, you know, issues with Prozac and issues with the world. And I don't know, it actually got it, it. You know, there's a lot of disagreement on the value of this book, which the publisher trashed her for not having any talent. Rest in peace, Elizabeth Wurtzel. She died this year, actually. Rest in peace, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
So this is another portion that's
Biggie Smalls.
Like, yeah. Biggie Smalls, Tupac Shakur.
Yeah. Yeah.
Left eye.
Tupac's not dead, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Tupac's still alive. My bad.
He's alive, man. He's coming back. He's going to run. If he doesn't run for president, someday his hologram will, I think.
Come with me, Hail Mary. Anyway, yeah. So this portion, Hank wants Mia to admit that it's not her book, and Mia keeps screwing with him. This is something where it's like, dude, if you really wrote that book, you'd just be like, I wrote that thing. Well, there's just, like, no way.
But, well, would you? How much...
I'd
how much leverage?
It's how much not leverage? Even about the leverage. Like, I just wouldn't.
This is just too far. You're willing to accept the consequences.
Yeah. There's just no way. If I actually did something and, like, people were like, no, you didn't do it, I would. I mean, there have been several times in my life that's actually happened, and I just go on monkey tell me.
Well, this is an interesting question here, Wayne. Hypothetical question for you. Suppose that you could write the great American novel. Right, like you write a novel that is just becomes immortal and it lives on and is taught in, you know, literature classes as a novel for its era for the rest of, you know, human history, however little time we have left of that. Right.
Yeah.
But the novel is not credited to you. Would you take this? Nobody ever knows you wrote it. Like, the novel just gets mad respect. It's put in the upper echelon of the canon, yeah. You know, but nobody ever knows that you wrote it, gets credited to somebody else, or it gets credited anonymously. Like, nobody ever knows. Nobody
anonymous
ever knows.
Anonymous is okay.
Anonymous is okay.
Yeah, for sure. Anonymous is okay.
Okay. What if it gets credited? Yeah.
To somebody, it would have to be a spectrum of whether I have aligned values with that person in real life.
Mm-hmm. What if I steal it from you, but like I steal it from you in a, just a really like evil sociopathic way?
I'm okay with you doing it.
But even if I'd like completely wrong you, like I just jacked the book like Mia did, you know? I mean, like, basically, I have done something that at this point we can really no longer be friends because what I've done is so wrong. But for whatever reason, you have to imagine I have some kind of leverage on you where it's really uncomfortable for you to out me publicly on this.
If I have the guarantee that it would be, like, as you said, in the history books, then it's better that happens than if it's completely shelved and
I mean, the question is, is this novel so great that it just needs to be out there, right? But then it's awful. But like, that's different. Like, what if you have like a traumatic brain injury and I discover your manuscript and publish that as my own? That seems like better. Yeah. That seems also super wrong what I did, right? And actually, I wouldn't do that to you actually. But but then I guess you would have a lot less knowledge of it depending on your brain injury. You just not.
Yeah, but no, that's a different scenario. It's just like, one is this a piece of work that's, you know, meant to stand the test of time, in which like
right.
it the good is greater than my personal gain. In the case of Hank's thing, it is like Mia's actually like involved in the book, but Hank is the one that wrote it. So like
it's a straight theft. I mean, it's a straight theft.
Yeah.
What if open David were to steal the book from you? Would that be okay?
It's not, I mean, if I'm like incapacitated or just like GG, it's over, then
yeah.
Like he wouldn't be the worst person.
Okay. How about Peter the Floor Man? All right.
I didn't have anything against him, but
yeah, me neither. I still don't.
I still don't, but it'd be definitely, you know, as much as open David has
who is someone who, if they stole your book, it just couldn't happen? Like, who's your most hated person?
There's definitely a list. I'm not going to mention anything, but there's definitely,
yeah.
I think everybody has a list of people they're just like absolutely.
Oh yeah, I get it. Okay, you can't mention anybody because of your position, so yes. I get it. So let me try and come up with them for you. No, I'm just kidding. I won't do that to you. All right.
Thank you.
And I forgot how well you got along with Open David. He listens to everything you do, and he's one of your biggest fans. So
he wouldn't be the worst. I mean, he's probably even going to admit that some of his behavior is like, you know, not kosher.
Yeah, he's probably watching this episode right now. Shout out to Open David. Hey, buddy.
I could send it to him.
Yes, go ahead and send it to him and let him know since sexual harassment is such a big part of the episode. Shout out to Open David for grabbing my dick under the table. Yeah, good. Thanks a lot, buddy. Fantastic.
Hey, he warned you ahead of time. Open. All right, all the Californication people are like, what the hell is this? But Joe Kim might know what we're talking about. But
she might. If she doesn't, you should. This is quite a character.
A warning, Joe Kim. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, we need a trigger warning on these episodes, by the way, the content. I mean, if you get into a Californication episode, I guess you should know the content's going to be dicey, but
that's fair. But in all seriousness, if what Mia did happen to me, I would definitely go on Monkey Tail and be like, dude, I wrote this, like, I have, you know.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, especially now, I just have so much, like, overlapping proof. But, you know, for the story's sake, Hank doesn't have proof that it's his.
I think I would too, but yeah, damn the consequences, full speed ahead. And I don't think it's going to be that tough for him to prove that it's his. You know, they're like, basically the agents are going to put it together. They're going to look at the writing. They're going to compare the writing. They actually have computers now that can compare the writing. You know, I think I talked to you about this before, but you know, you're a big Shakespeare fan, and like, computers have pretty much proven without a doubt that there's that Christopher Marlowe wrote some of Shakespeare. You know,
really?
Like, yeah. Yeah. So there was like some, you know, back in the day, there was some sharing or helping, rewriting, things like that. And you know, computers can compare the pros and look at things like that. So the so yeah, I
Double
mean like they
entendre, pros, PROSE and PROS,
Yeah,
pros.
well, pros, the second part of it, PROS, would not apply to the people, you know, taking part in this podcast. But if you add the word wannabe ahead of it, then I guess we're there.
Tell me
Yeah.
what you want to really, really want.
I wanted to be a poker player, but it turns out I was just a trust funder who, you know, used my trust fund to support myself as I went through. I'm not a trust funder. Don't hate. All right. Not I wasn't anyways.
Anyway, so
Yeah.
so obviously everyone's like, "Hey, what's going on? Like, why you're on Tilt?" And
Yeah,
the game
and
just keeps
like
needling
it
them.
makes no sense to them, right? It can't make any sense to them at all. They're just like, "What is this guy doing here?" You know, like, and he almost has to tell them what he's doing, but he can't, you know, because Mia doesn't back down. She just me man, Mia just operates at 100 all the time. Never any back down with Mia. Never any moderation with Mia at all. Maybe with Becca, there's a little bit, but not with Hank.
She shouldn't. I mean, there's definitely some unresolved issues, so whatever. Bill tries, so the next scene, Bill tries to calm Karen down. Bill talks about Mia's new book, and then Bill wants Karen to sign some prenup, which would include Becca's trust fund, I guess. I don't know about you. If I saw, my kid as trust fund, if I'm ever gonna sell out to, like, some rich lady, boom, auto
Yeah,
sign.
British ladies, if you're out there, right, we're
Yeah.
down. Yeah, no, I'm totally like, she's like, I don't care about the trust fund, I just care about Becca living with me. He's like, get it together. That's all I care about is the trust fund, and also not signing that prenup. You know, like, no, we don't need this trust. Let me just sign this trust fund right here. You know, the prenup. No, we don't need any of that. Come on, we love each other. You know, like, just saying. You know, that prenup's a big, it's a big fight.
Holla, we want prenup. We want prenup. Karen's too
Why
messed
would
up.
you? Why would you want a prenup? Don't you really love me? Don't you trust that I love you? Just saying.
Karen's too messed up in the head because Becca's leaving, and Becca says, "Look, Karen," or Becca's not really leaving. And like Bill echoes what Hank says, it's just a phase, so it seems like this is like a male thing, or at least male characters in Californication be like, look, it's just a phase, teenagers, they got their,
Yeah. Yeah.
thing.
Do you think that's true?
Yeah, but like I do understand Karen's side. It's like you raise this little munchkin to, and then she's like, I want to live with the person who,
Wayne,
didn't
did you go
breastfeed
through a
me.
phase? Did you go through a phase as a teenager?
I definitely had an anti like parents thing, but it's like it that part's natural in the sense that you start sentient in the sentient thinking, and you discover you're your own person, and you're trying to figure out like, what you're gonna become.
Yeah.
So I feel like that
Did
part's.
you ever figure it out?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
It just wasn't
Okay.
accepted. It's not my
It's
fault. It's not my
okay.
fault.
No, that's all
Yeah.
right. I wanted to become an eagle,
An
and
eagle?
an eagle, and that's I've been a failure thus far, but I'm still trying.
Okay. Will you
Yeah.
settle for an ego?
No, some of their members have died now, so I'm still trying to get into the band. I don't have any. I have no ego. I either have no ego or infinite ego. It depends on the day. Yeah.
Balancing your range.
There's no balance there. It's very polarized. Yeah.
So Bill says Hank is going to screw up on the car ride home anyway, and Karen's like, yeah, that's true. So, do.
Yeah.
Oops.
Where are we at now?
Hold on.
We're at Hank and Mia on the street, right?
Yeah, Hank and me in the street.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's
Mia
okay.
said, "This so this is the I guess, hell hath no woman like a or hell hath no fury like a woman scorned." Mia's like, "Hank,
Uh-oh.
you fucked her and didn't want anything to do with her. It doesn't sit well with the ladies."
Yeah,
So.
that I mean it actually does if they it depends. right? Because a lot of times that's what they want. But, you know, if that's not what they want, then it doesn't sit well. I mean, they basically get to make the decisions about how things go. You know, they're the choosers, and the real trick is you have to get yourself into the position of being a chooser, which is not easy. But you wouldn't know that, Wayne, because you're a celebrity now, so you're much more of a chooser. I'm still a beggar.
Sure. Anyway, this is a vicious cycle because I feel like it's always the guys that get like burned first. Because they got asked really? Them when they're teenagers. I don't know. No, I mean, obviously.
Here's the thing. Guys are so much more unprepared than girls because they're always more experienced than we are because they're forced to grow up younger. Yeah. So, and they're also willing to date. They're also willing to date older guys. And when guys are teenagers, we can't really date younger girls. Like, you know, that guy, I mean, we all knew that guy in high school who was dating like a middle school student, right? And it was always just pathetic. It was just, it was incredible, you know, and like that wasn't okay. You know, that's okay when you're like, you know, 25, but it's not okay when you're, you know, 15. So, sure. So we're really, you know, we're in real trouble in the very early days of our, you know, we're trying to set out, we're, you know, like, we're playing with ourselves in like math class, you know, like erections at awkward times, and you know, we can't figure anything out and none of the girls like us, and it's all terrible and has, you know, lifelong consequences that involve us trying to burn and hurt everyone, you know, that we ever connect with in our future. Maybe it's not the same for you, I don't know.
Oh no, I just like there's like, you know, even being older and more experienced going through interactions, like, dude, it's still like I see a whole bunch of like messy issues, so I don't know.
Yeah,
it's like it's like I feel like it, like this stuff is just like not taught about the whole like interaction unwanted, and it's always going to be just like, you know, just
nothing gets taught. We get this like romantic comedyized version of how things are supposed to be, and they're just not like that, so
but
I still sit outside of Esther's house every night, you know, just waiting. Play my guitar, you know, which I can't play. Maybe that's why. Maybe if I learn how to play, actually, maybe she'd be. You think? Yeah, I should learn how to play.
I think like it's also like, even though it's like, you know, me is like, you know, you fucked me, didn't want anything to do with me, blah, that doesn't say with a woman. It's like every time a guy like takes a girl for the date and they're just like, oh, you know, there's no next time, and the guy pays. It's like. That starts like this vicious cycle too.
Well, who said the guy pays?
I don't know. I mean, it is debatable, but like if it's in between, like, you know, chop chop or the guy pays, like if the guy is like always, you know, paying, then just like,
nah, dude, forget that. Like that's the thing. If you don't pay, then you'll get next time from the ones that you want to get next time from. If you pay, I'm trying to get rid of the riffraff right off the bat. I used to anyways. That was when I had options. Now I'm just, you know, now I'm out there like trolling the homeless, man, just trying to get anything I can. But, you know,
Hank accuses me of setting out just to hurt him. Mia enjoys being the center of attention. And Mia's, you know, it's like, I love it. And then Hank's like, it's going to go away. He's like, yeah, whatever. I still love it now.
Yeah, and he called her a young sociopath in training, which is true.
Yeah.
Right? But then she says that's like Satan calling one of his minions, you know, but like Hank is not a sociopath. He really isn't a sociopath. Like he cares about other people, right? And he doesn't do things. He's hapless in some ways, and maybe this is a little bit generous, but I don't see Hank as a person who tries to hurt other people at all. You know, so I don't.
Yeah, not maliciously. It's more just like, you know, he has an ego. He's hedonistic, but like.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if things are mutual, then he's not right. Like seeking out to hurt people. So to say.
Exactly. One thing I did love about this scene was when Mia started calling out like the normal paths, right? When she's like obsessed with like the easy way to like try and get fame or whatever, but she's like, well, what are the normal paths for me, right? And all her normal paths are all like. She's like, oh, I can get a job at like an agency, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, well, these normal paths are all entertainment related. I guess this is the only way she sees her life. I guess she grew up as Bill's child in LA or whatever. But like, yeah, she's right, man. Those normal paths suck. Like normal paths, normal job, like they all suck. Like I can understand wanting to take a shortcut.
Sure.
Because like, Yeah, I mean, there's a reason we ended up poker players. Like, the normal paths are, they're miserable, man. And everyone hates on poker players, but, like, I see how people are when they work normal jobs. Like, they're not any happier.
It's not even that. It's just, like, I don't know. I feel like our generation is the first one that didn't have many good options with, like, the rising costs. Just, like, normal jobs, like, you know, just aren't paying enough. And just, like, multiple, you know, people, you have multiple jobs. I have multiple jobs. And our jobs pay decently well for jobs. And we're still, like, you know, multi-grinding.
I'm glad for you that poker pays decently well for you. You must play better than I do.
But, well, at least the prop job is like, you know, if people heard our salary, they'd be like,
covers my losses. Right,
covers our losses.
Yeah. Allows me to, you know, get my gambling addiction on 8 hours a day, and at the end of the month, not have less money than I started with most months.
Sure. Yeah. So in Runkle's office, Danny California is out for blood, claiming, you know, Mia's book is going to be hot, sell 5 million copies off the jacket photo alone, which that is real. Just, you know, the pick of
then Mia's. If that were real, then it would be much easier to sell books than all these women who have to take, you know, bit parts in Californication and How I Met Your Mother to pay their bills. They'd be able to just throw themselves up on a book jacket. So I don't know, man. It's tough to sell books these days. I don't know how many people actually even end up looking at the book jacket. Do bookstores even exist? If they exist, aren't they all independent bookstores where people don't care, you know, how hot the authors are, because everyone shopping at an independent bookstore is ugly anyways. So, you know, like, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I did like the kind of speech. It was wholly inappropriate where she was like, sex in the workplace can mix. We subverted dominant paradigms. Have you? Really? From a feminist standpoint, we're about to launch a major female writer who's going to sell 500,000 copies on the book jacket alone. From a feminist standpoint, really? Okay, sure. If you say so, Danny California. Seems like a very self-serving narrative, but I guess it works for you. And I did like that Charlie had to say he had to get out of this meeting right after he has the epiphany. He has another headache, which is a callback to when he made Danny California crawl around on the ground looking for his Advil, and then, you know, Marcy walked in the room. Marcy was not in this episode at all, right? And also, I don't think Becca was in the last episode at all, right? So I guess we're running into some...
Pay issues.
Pay issues, or maybe they can't... they have other things going on.
Sure.
Know? So...
So...
Maybe Pamela Adlon was needed in Louis C.K.'s hotel room or something.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Moving on!
Moving on! Runkle thinks something up, and now... Next scene, Becca's moving out, and Karen has her last bit of, you know, nostalgia. Like, oh, we can take care, you know, we can bring this. And, you know, Becca's moving most of her essentials, so to say. And Becca suggests that she and Karen go into the Getty alone, just them two. And Karen says that she would like that. That's great. But it's, like, the fact that Becca is choosing Hank. But it's not just, like, choosing Hank. I feel like Becca just has the image of her head of, you know, Hank, Karen, Becca, and choosing Hank is at least more true to Hank, Karen,
that's right,
Becca than Karen, Mia, Bill, and Becca.
That's right. Absolutely right. And ironic that she suggests going to the Getty, because the Getty is like this amazingly beautiful space, but the art contained within is actually like kind of like lower tier. And that's like, you know, mimicking the choice that Karen made to go with Bill, right? To go to this like beautiful space, this beautiful home, this beautiful life, but at the end of the day, lacking, you know, some kind of substance that Hank has. And so Becca is going for the substance, but then knows if she wants to reconnect with her mom, she has to go for the flash, right? She has to go for the superficial, right? So that's where they're going to go reconnect. So that probably wasn't intentional, but it felt like a real call out.
Well, you know, I mean, if it's a good thing, shout out to Tom. You get credit.
I give him no credit, and I feel dumber for having
heard that.
Fine.
Yeah. Mia comes in. Mia and Becca are like having banter about her moving out, and you know, Mia's like, "Yeah, that's what sisters do. They like tease each other." Becca confronts Mia then and is like, "You know, Karen's marrying Bill, and so you know." Becca can't pretend it's not happening, and Becca is trying to hold on to, like, personal truth that it's, and she's trying to salvage whatever personal truth she can, you know, maintain, which I think a lot of us do that too.
We have to, no choice, right? How else do you get by? Yeah. Yeah, I always find the scenes, as much as, you know, Mia going 100 all the time, you know, is difficult for me. I always find the scenes where she acts like a normal human with real emotions to be awkward and unconvincing.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think she has real emotions, you know, but she does seem to really connect with Becca. Here, she's trying to connect with Becca. She's like, we're sisters, you know, whether Becca like feels like they're sisters or not, I don't know. You know, like, obviously they're not actual sisters. So, but yeah, Mia's really kind and in the scene, but it's mostly about Becca. You know, I think she thinks she's going back to help Hank out, right? She's like, there's no hope. The man's got nothing, right? She's going back to save him, as Karen, you know, once, as Karen says, I think earlier or later in the episode.
So Becca says Hank's book isn't happening. Becca, you know, claims this is like, you know, Hank's rock bottom, death hope. Yep. So partially, you know, Becca going with Hank too, it's just like the guy's got like nothing.
Right. And of course the book not happening is not true, and Becca doesn't know that, and Mia does know that, but of course Mia can't spill the beans because Mia, you know, she sucks. So
yeah. So Mia claims Hank still has Becca, which is true as well.
Yeah. Then we had this cut scene where Hank was like cleaning up his house.
Yeah.
Right? Like crazy. That's what my house looks like. Like, he was picking up like all his mail off the ground and stuff like that. That's exactly what my house looks like right now. Like, my floor is littered with unopened mail that I haven't opened for like weeks. Like, you know, my place is, yeah, I pretty much am only motivated by somebody else viewing my place. So right now it's as disgusting as it's ever been.
So Runkle busts in on Hank and says, loved your new novel, so Runkle knows. And Hank's like, thank you. And then Runkle's like, the thing is, you only write what you know, so what's the deal?
Yeah. And super Hank, call out, right? Yeah.
So Hank admits he saw her bookstore, didn't know she's underage. Hank was self-loathing at the time, and, you know.
Yeah. Tells him how it was. I mean, that, which is, you know, probably a relief for Runkle, because, you know, Runkle is imagining that Hank put the moves on her, right? Knowing that it was his, you know, like, you know, Bill's daughter and stuff like that, which isn't exactly what happened. So probably a relief, but still explains why, you know, Runkle and Hank are actually parallels here, and that they're both being blackmailed because of their, you know, sexual dalliances and errors. So, Runkle quite knowingly and Hank unknowingly, but still, you know, rather negligently. Yeah.
And Mia's book has many offers, and, you know, it's just like the repercussions are huge. Karen, must Becca, be nice. Mia, the police, F the police. Anyway.
Yeah, shout out to ACAB 1312. Right.
Becca moves in. Hank says he's sorry. Karen says, about what? You won. Ooh.
I mean, that's just the wrong way to put it, right? But that's how she feels, right? I mean, it's not a game. It's not a game to be won or lost. Everybody's lost. That's just how it is. There's just a lot of losses built in when you, you know, have a child, which is why the correct decision is not having children. You know, you have children, you're going to cause them to suffer. And I just saw an article in The New Yorker by a guy who's a fixture of the anti-natalist movement, which is the anti-giving birth movement, of which I am a member, involuntarily. So, this is why, man. All you do is cause suffering. So don't have, if you're out there, right, if you're one of our fans, don't have kids.
Becca says that it's not the end. Oh, sorry. Becca moves in. Hank says, sorry. Yeah. And then Becca says it's not the end with Karen. It's just a hiatus. Teary-eyed Karen said she loves her.
Aww. Really touching.
Yeah. Hank and Karen Hank and Becca watch TV with that awesome dog. That awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Was the dog there? I missed him.
Yeah.
He's just chilling there. What, Cat Stevens?
Is it that dog? Oh, is it?
Is it a different dog? They have a different dog now?
No, Hank bought the dog for Becca.
Well, he stole the dog, right?
Yeah, he stole the dog, but that was the wrong dog. But Meredith kept it anyway. But Becca was pissed off at Hank, and Hank bought her a puppy. And then Becca's like, no more pissed off anymore.
Oh, okay, so it's a different dog.
Yeah. dog that was it. It wasn't Cat Stevens, but
no. But we need like a spinoff show to figure out what happened to Cat Stevens.
That's true.
You know, because like this is somebody that's going to bother me forever now. Like, I don't. Did he have to go back? Did Meredith keep him? Yeah. I thought Meredith dumped the dog on Hank. All right.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
For the three people that watch this, not including Joe Kim, can you please check out the
dog? Yeah, leave us some comments about what happened to Cat Stevens. Let's write the Cat Stevens story, right? You know. Yeah.
So, yeah, and then Becca asks Hank if he's depressed. Hank's like, no. Which is...
Yeah, Becca was very monotone and very robotic in this scene. This scene is like exactly why I don't like Becca, but, you know, like, she just doesn't sound like a human. But it's all good. I guess she's just a teenager going through a phase. You know, she's super cool or whatever. Teenagers.
So next scene, Karen has issues, wants to talk to Bill, but he's like snoring and won't wake up. So that's like symbolic of what their relationship's going to be. It's like Bill's stable, but there's no like real emotional connection, so to say. And
yeah, Bill's a snore, man. The guy's a loser. He can go out and keep bageling Hank Greenberg in tennis, but you know, he's not going to give you much. You know, he'll give you a trust fund though, which is why you should marry him anyways.
And then Karen goes to Hank's place, sees Becca.
Yeah, what's up with that? So Karen just like creeps in on Hank's place in the middle of the night, then creeps into Becca's room, then starts, you know, hugging on Becca, and I mean, I might say Rebecca, but hugging on Becca, like, and wakes her up. Like, there's no way Becca wouldn't wake up. Like, Becca is sleeping in this bed. She hasn't been sleeping in this place a lot. You know, so there's no way she wouldn't wake up here. And this is going to be like, this is extremely creepy. Could you imagine if this happened to you?
If I was Becca?
If you were anyone, like if somebody started hugging and kissing you at night, I'd be like, oh, thank God. God has answered my prayers, right? And then, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think if you're a kid and it's your mom, I wouldn't be.
But wouldn't you be freaked out for a second? First of all, you wouldn't know it was your mom, number one.
That's
number
fair.
Two, it's the middle of the night and you have some level of understanding that Karen's not supposed to be in this environment. So what's she doing here in the middle of the night? This would creep me out. Like, Hank doesn't hear anybody sneak into the house. You know, like, these people they're not very safe, man. They feel way too comfortable in their Venice,
Venice. So.
Yeah, man. I don't understand. They don't live in the part of Venice that Bill lives in. You know, Bill lives in, like, the canals. You know, he should feel comfortable. He's fine. But, yeah, Hank should be a little bit more wary of, you know, home invaders. So.
Well, here we have it. And the next episode is the
series. Well, hold on. It's not the end, though. Before she leaves the house, she goes over and she sees, you know, like, shirtless Hank with a book, you know, on his chest, like, sleeping. And she gives a big old smile and then she shuts the light off, right? And it's the end of the episode. Is it the end of the relationship? Is Karen finally saying goodbye? Is she finally accepting that things are how they are? That, you know, running off with Bill, you know, has now cost her Hank, has cost her child, who's no longer living with her. She's given everything up for Bill. Is she reflecting on how bad of a decision this is, right? And the show, which purports to be about Hank, maybe it's really about Karen. I'm just saying.
Hashtag deep. So, yeah, I mean, the next episode is the season finale.
Oh, no. I, you know, I can see the tear coming down from your eyes. You know, listen, Wayne and I have said, you know, like, season two's happening if we get 5 Patreon subscribers.
That one's a promise, but.
Just saying, you know.
We'll try to get a special guest for the next one.
Yeah. We are going to try and get David Duchovny. We're going to try and get David Duchovny or Evan Handler, or possibly both of them, to appear on the episode. So when you guys see episode 12 come out, you definitely should check it out. I think that, you know, I think we're going to be able to swing it. I think we're going to be able to get one of the stars of the show on our podcast next episode. So, you know, tune in next time to see who we get. There's a couple other options too. Certainly we know the actress who played Becca isn't doing much. So, you know, there's a lot of options.
A lot of options. A lot of options.
Yeah. Have you seen David Duchovny lately?
What's he doing?
Not much, right? Yeah, check out Google David Duchovny 2020 and check out the images. He can't be doing much anymore, so we might be able to get him. We're gonna try for you. You know, this is how much we care about our fans.
Mr. Duchovny, listen, if you need poker coaching, subscribe to liveofthebike.com.
Yeah, hire Wayne if you need poker coaching, and sign up for our Patreon, because you know we're gonna take all the money we have in Patreon and we're gonna give it to David Duchovny, and you know, to get him on our episode. He probably won't take it because I think he still has money. But, you know, there are some people on the
that
show
makes
who
one
might,
of us.
Yeah. No, there are some people who might really be hurting. And, you know, like, if we can get 5 Patreon subscribers and have about $10 in our Patreon, like, we will we'll offer that to, you know, all of the actors and actresses who played on Californication. And we'll see what we can get, you know.
All right. We need to do our introduction. So this is Michael Amos.
Make sure you guys hit subscribe and sign up for notifications for the newest episodes on the YouTube.
D22.
I love you, Wayne. I love you.
I love you. No homo.
Thanks, man. Thanks.